So with that, I think we're ready to turn things over to Melissa Friedland from the EPA's Office of Superfund Remediation and Technology Innovation, who will do some welcoming remarks as we kick off this Internet seminar on the Superfund Redevelopment Initiative, the 10th anniversary where we're celebrating our successes. Melissa?
Thank you, Jean. Welcome, everyone, to our continuing webinar series. Today's topic is working with local governments, and I just want to say right off so that I don't forget that this topic is so important that next month's seminar on October 22nd is a continuation of today's discussion. Next month's topic is municipal acquisitions by local governments and legal tools for reuse. So now that I've said that, I know I won't forget it. Thank you all for being here. I'm joined by Fran Castanzi, who wears many hats, but is right now the Superfund Redevelopment Initiative Coordinator in Region 8, and she'll be talking specifically about the Midvale Slag site and her experiences with local governments. I wanted to give you just a little bit of background. As I said, this is a continuing series. We are celebrating Superfund Redevelopment's 10th anniversary. So if you could all now just turn to the next slide, which should be on page 2. It says Impacts of National Priorities List Sites. You'll see a map, and you'll see that National Priorities List Sites are found nationwide, and many are near population centers. Some, obviously, are in more populated areas, and others less so. But one thing is certain, they have a national presence, and the local governments who have an NPL site in their community can face significant challenges. But what we're hoping to communicate in this presentation is that there can also be significant benefits. Let's move on to the next slide. Can I say the next one? I guess I better say the number. Okay, so we're on slide number 3. Why does EPA care about the reuse of sites? The National Contingency Plan preamble, which are the rules and regs that guide the program, specifically discuss land use assumptions regarding the baseline risk assessment. And the baseline risk assessment provides the basis for taking a remedial action at a Superfund site, and it supports the development of remedial action objectives. Land use assumptions affect the exposure pathways that are evaluated in the baseline risk assessment. So current land use is critical in determining whether there is a current risk associated with a Superfund site, and future land use is important in estimating potential future threats. The results of the risk assessment aid in determining the degree of remediation necessary to ensure long-term protection at NPL sites, and working with local governments and other stakeholders plays a key role in understanding the current and future uses of land. This is a picture on this slide. It is a great success story about local governments overcoming obstacles to reuse their Superfund sites. So I want to encourage you to visit our website to learn more about the Eastland Woolen Mill site in Corinna, Maine. The site is a testament to the success that can be achieved through an EPA state, local government, and community partnership. And again, the critical role that reuse planning and planning grants can have on the revitalization of a community. And EPA also recognizes that there are other benefits associated with the reuse of sites, and I'm going to run through those. So now slide 4. Protecting remedies, remedial, and long-term stewardship benefits. This is a pretty compelling picture. It's evidence of vagrants and trespassers in an abandoned building at the Solatron microwave site in Florida. The building has since been demolished, and the site will be reused as the post-Salerno Industrial Park. But getting back to our benefits, reuse can protect remedies. Responsible reuse of sites can help to ensure that the remedies remain protective. If a site is being used, it is less likely to become a target for inappropriate or illegal activities such as vandalism, dumping, trespassing, or activities that could damage a landfill cap. And the process of reusing a site can ensure that institutional controls are implemented appropriately and effectively. Many of EPA's reuse tools, such as Ready for Reuse Determinations, promote safe reuses of sites if and only if land use restrictions are being met. In addition, local organizations using a facility on a regular basis can immediately alert appropriate authorities if repairs need to be made. For example, a local soccer organization may observe that grass needs to be replanted over a portion of a cap, or someone using the facility may realize there's a hole in a fence. People are keeping an eye on the site, and they can let the appropriate authorities know. Going on to slide 5. Okay. Growing smarter, environmental and social benefits of reuse. This, I have pictures on all my slides, and I think it's important to just spend a second talking about them because they're all example, great reuse examples, and you can find out more about them. But this picture is the remedy for the Industriplex site in Woburn, Mass., and it allows for the site's reuse, including a regional transportation center and a commercial retail district. And I hope that by the time we go through all these pictures, you'll have an idea that reuse is not just one type of reuse, that there are many things that can happen. So I'm getting back to the benefits of reuse. I'd like to spend a minute and talk about environmental benefits. You may know that urban development consumes 160 acres of land an hour in the United States, and wetlands are lost at a rate of 100,000 acres per year. Most cities are growing faster spatially than they are gaining population, resulting in sprawling development patterns. Unregulated growth, which we also call urban sprawl, generates pollution, heavy traffic, environmental degradation, and a lowered quality of life for communities. And the reuse of Superfund sites can help address these concerns and ensure continued protection of human health and the environment now and in the future. There are other benefits. We have protected green fields. If there are Superfund sites that can be redeveloped within existing communities, this reduces market pressure to develop green fields, including undeveloped land, agricultural areas, and wildlife habitat at the outskirts of urban and suburban jurisdictions. Minimize infrastructure investment. Superfund sites are often located in close proximity to existing infrastructure, including public utilities, water and sewer, and transportation networks due to prior land uses at the sites, which minimize the need for new infrastructure investments. The development of greenfield areas, in contrast, can require the extension of high-cost infrastructure. And infill development in open space. The location of sites within existing communities means that they can provide unique opportunities for infill development in open space within already developed neighborhoods and commercial districts. Now on slide 6, providing opportunity, local economic benefits of reuse. This is our newest picture. It's the Stringer Welding Manufacturing Plant in Libby, Montana. It's being developed at the Stimson Lumber Mill Superfund site. And when it's fully operational, it's a $12.7 million facility that's going to employ 200 skilled workers to manufacture steel bridge components for projects throughout the northwestern United States and parts of Canada. We hope to be sharing more about this event and success on our SRI website in the near future. Going to the next slide, the Superfund Redevelopment Initiative. Let me spend a minute talking about this picture. On the left is the Peterson Sand and Gravel site in Libertyville, Illinois. The new lake is the former quarry, and the site is now the Independence Forest Preserve. On the right, the Ohio River Park in Neville, Pennsylvania is a multi-million dollar sports and entertainment complex. It's become increasingly clear that consideration of the reuse of a Superfund site is an integral part of the remedial process. And by supporting reuse at Superfund sites, we're not only trying to help local communities regain these potential assets, but we also believe we're finding good stewards who will take care of the sites and assist in the long-term protection of human health and the environment. So in light of this, SRI, as we call it, the Superfund Redevelopment Initiative, has recently expanded its efforts. Not only does SRI create policies and practices that accommodate the future use of sites through remedies that are consistent with the anticipated future use, but SRI now offers tools and resources to support reuse throughout the remedial process. We know that not every tool is right for every community, but we want to understand your needs and concerns and think about what we can do to help. Now going to slide 8. Again, our pictures, the Aptex Fiber site in Region 3 was a 1999 pilot, is now home to soccer fields. The Oronago Dwenweg site in Region 7, a 2001 pilot, is becoming a new bypass. It was becoming a bypass that's driving economic development. And Midvale Slag is going to be discussed by Fran later in our presentation. It, too, was one of our pilots. The pilot grants taught us some incredibly valuable lessons. And one is that the complexities of individual Superfund sites often make the challenges and opportunities facing its reuse unique. There is a no one-size-fits-all approach for Superfund redevelopment. And often, there is a champion of the reuse effort, the local government, a community member, a group, or a site owner. And many times, it's all of these entities working together. The other thing our pilots taught us was that we needed tools that local governments and other stakeholders could use to move beyond what was often a legacy of mistrust and fear, sometimes spanning decades. Moving on to slide 9, SRI's current activities. We have a number of new tools and resources under development, in addition to an array of tools that are available right now. And in the following slides, I'll share with you how we can help in each of these areas. Going to slide 10. This year happens to mark our 10th anniversary, so we had a lot of time to make tools and resources that we hope meet your needs. I'm going to talk about some of our newest ones, and I'll go over some of our older tools we found to be especially useful for local governments. But I encourage you to call me if there's something you need that you didn't learn about today. We might have something that fits your needs, and if we don't, we'll explore options for creating something you can use. We started out with no tools, and now we've developed a whole bag of tricks or a whole large toolbox. So we believe if there's a problem out there, we can figure out how to solve it. We have two great videos that discuss our partnership with the Academy of Model Aeronautics and the story of a local town that overcame Superfund stigma to find light at the end of the tunnel. We will actually show our Life After Superfund video at the end of this webinar for those who would like to stay on the line and see it. We have something called our Top 10 Reasons for Buying a Superfund Site. It's our new bestseller. If you ever wanted to read a document that succinctly addresses some of the biggest concerns regarding the purchase of a Superfund site, this is it. We have a user-friendly 4-page fact sheet that provides a quick overview of the key components essential for the reuse of Superfund sites that can prepare local governments for what needs to be done to think about reuse and how to approach it. The fact sheet, Reuse Planning, 4 Keys to Success, should be available on our website soon. There's been a lot of talk about reusing sites to support alternative energy production and to meet agricultural demand, which can also feed into alternative energy. Although not quite ready, we've been working on reports and case studies we hope to share with you soon. And also in the near future, we expect to have a comprehensive handbook that explores the ins and outs of local municipalities acquiring contaminated properties. For those interested in learning more, I invite you to check back in for our October webinar. I'm going to the next slide, slide 11. Our oldies but goodies tools, our ready for reuse determinations or RFR determinations continue to be an excellent tool. They're an environmental status report that says in plain English the uses of the site can support and the limitations, they're an environmental status report in plain English that goes over what a site can support and the limitations on reuse. Local governments have found them especially useful because it's a tool they can share with the community at large that reassures everyone that EPA acknowledges that a site is ready to be returned to use. We also have something called the SURE Information Library. It's an excellent source of information. SURE stands for Superfund Redevelopment, and it provides a snapshot of information about Superfund sites that are in reuse or where reuse is planned. Users can store and aggregate information on the economic impacts associated with various reuse categories. Users can also search the database using a number of criteria, including site name, location, NPL status, reuse status, type of reuse, contaminant group, and type of remedy. We're always working to update it to include information on sites, and we're especially looking now for sites providing alternative energy, and we want to include pictures. If you have information you'd like to share, let us know. Our Reuse Help Desk is a tool EPA staff and local governments with a Superfund site in their community can use to get immediate help. Maybe you want help identifying sites other communities have used as soccer fields. Maybe you want to see if there's a tool available to help you deal with a particular issue. The Help Desk staff can help you think through that and put you in touch with someone to get you started. And finally, I encourage you to make good use of our SRI website. As part of our 10th anniversary, we've added hundreds of new site reuse snapshots across the country, in addition to new pictures and uploading and organizing many new tools. If you haven't checked it out recently, I encourage you to do so. I'm moving to slide 12, Reuse Planning, Goals and Objectives. SRI provides seed money to regions to support enhanced stakeholder involvement processes that help communities figure out the anticipated future land uses at their Superfund sites. We can enhance EPA's consideration of reasonably anticipated future land use. And as I talked about before, land use assumptions inform exposure pathways evaluated in the baseline risk assessment. And the baseline risk assessment provides the basis for taking a remedial action at a Superfund site and supports the development of remedial action objectives. EPA uses tools such as reuse planning to better understand the reasonably anticipated future land use. It's critical to involve local communities in assessing the future use because local communities play a key role in a site's future use. Reuse planning can result in many additional benefits for communities, which we'll discuss in the next slide. And this is a map of Picayune, Mississippi, where we've done some reuse planning. I'm going on now to slide 12, reuse planning benefits. This is a picture of a draft site reuse framework for the city of Louisville, Mississippi. With our reuse planning, we have the potential for targeted remedial process and lower remedial costs. We're able to establish realistic community expectations, and we've strengthened the working relationship between communities and EPA. We found that in our reuse planning, people come in with some incredible expectations, and going through this process helps us come to terms with what is possible. Some people say that's a really bad idea because you just let people say whatever they want, but the fact is people say whatever they want, and after we discuss it, we're able to establish realistic expectations about what can happen. I'm now going on to slide 14, return to use initiatives supporting reuse at cleaned up Superfund sites. The return to use initiative is one of SRI's primary efforts. While the initiative itself might not be a tool in the same sense as those we discussed on the previous slides, the activities carried out under the initiative have the potential to support reuse in a very effective way. The initiative has one major purpose. It's to remove barriers to reuse that are not necessary for the protection of human health and the environment or the remedy at those sites where remedies are already in place. As part of the initiative, EPA captures lessons learned at demonstration projects so other cleaned up sites can benefit from the experiences in the region. It also focuses on creating partnerships with local communities to help overcome barriers. EPA is working with communities to remove barriers and encourage appropriate reuse of sites by talking with stakeholders to understand the barriers to reuse, identifying and providing the tools needed to move sites into use, linking stakeholders with existing partners such as the Academy of Model Aeronautics, and sharing lessons learned and best practices. So I'm going to give you two examples of RTU demonstration projects, and of course Middale Slag is one of our most illustrative demonstration projects. These haven't officially been announced yet, so you're getting a sneak peek at our 2009 projects. I'm now going to slide 15. The South Point plant, which covers a 610-acre area in South Point in Lawrence County, Ohio. And from 1943 until 2001, the site was used for on-site munitions, fertilizer and chemical manufacturing, as well as energy production from coal and ethanol. The site's Superfund designation raised concerns among prospective industrial tenants as to whether redevelopment of the property would be safe and whether there would be added health risks associated with employees working on a Superfund site. But they also worried about potential liability, and businesses needed to be assured of site safety and confident in the value of relocating with a site. So EPA worked closely with the Lawrence Economic Development Corporation and the local government to support redevelopment. And in 2002, SRI awarded the Village of South Point a pilot grant to assess how site cleanup could best support reuse. And based on the results of this study, EPA issued a Ready for Reuse determination for the LEDC-owned portion of the site in 2003. So since the purchase of the site, the majority of the property has been redeveloped into a successful industrial park called The Point. And in 2008, seven businesses were operating on the site, including the Lawrence Economic Development Corporation, Applied Industrial Technologies, Ohio University Southern Campus Training Center, Engines, Inc., M&M Mailing, and a maintenance store. Approximately 150 people are employed at the park, and the number is expected to increase. Future plans include the addition of new tenants expansion of facilities, and construction of an intermodal facility that will serve as a vital road, rail, and river transportation resource. Portions of the site have also been leased for agricultural uses. Next slide, slide 16, Region 8 Lowry Landfill. This is a Superfund site that occupies approximately 500 acres of land 15 miles southeast of the city of Denver in Aurora, Colorado. And the city and county of Denver operated a municipal hazardous and industrial waste landfill at the site from 1966 until 1980. And Waste Management of Colorado continued municipal solid waste disposal at the site till 1990. In 2006, the Lowry Landfill Superfund site had completed remedy construction and was ready for use. Since this would be the first landfill gas-to-energy plant, using gas from a Superfund site to be considered within the state of Colorado, as well as the only active landfill gas-to-energy plant in Colorado, the novelty of this innovative facility presented potential administrative concerns, including logistics of permitting, approval, design, and construction planning. So the City of Denver and Waste Management of Colorado partnered with a local utility company, Xcel Energy, to discuss the best options for productively using the landfill gas emitted at both the Lowry Landfill and other facilities. And the stakeholders were highly motivated to implement this novel technology in Colorado based on potential environmental and economic benefits of the plant established by successful landfill gas-to-energy programs in other states. And as a result, parties worked together closely to advance required administrative logistics and facilitate a smooth implementation of the work plan. And now, since July of 2007, the mayor of Denver presided over a groundbreaking ceremony to officially launch construction of the landfill gas-to-energy plant. Each year, it's going to use four combustion engines to convert 630 million cubic feet of landfill gas from both the Lowry Landfill and the Denver Arapahoe disposal site into 3.2 megawatts of electrical power. The landfill gas to energy plant was officially opened at a ribbon cutting ceremony this last September 2008, and the utility company Xcel Energy is now distributing the electrical power to area residents and businesses. I'm going to move on to the next slide. Slide 17, site-wide ready for anticipated use measure. EPA developed a performance measure in 2006 to report the Superfund program's accomplishments in making land ready for reuse at construction complete sites. And this measure is included with other Superfund measures as part of the EPA's strategic plan. It has both annual and long-term targets. The measure was developed to comply with the agency's responsibility to report long-term outcome-based accomplishments under the Government Performance and Results Act. And the introduction of this measure reflects the high priority that EPA places on land revitalization as an integral part of the agency's cleanup mission for the Superfund program. If you're interested in knowing which sites meet this measure, visit our website. I hope I've given you enough background on Superfund redevelopment to let you know that we're all over the place. We have a lot of different kinds of reuses. We're a very active program, and we've developed a lot of tools to make things happen. I'd now like to turn this over to Fran Costanzi to tell us all about Midvale Slag. Fran?
Thanks, Melissa. Hello, everyone. I'm happy to talk to you about the Midvale Slag site, which is one of our success stories out here in the Denver region of EPA, the Denver-based region of EPA. So the Midvale Slag site, and I'm starting on page 19, and you can see there a picture of the smelter, which this site originally was, while it was operating back in the 40s, and how it looked before redevelopment started after the cleanup. So moving to page 20, what I'd like to do in this presentation is give some background on the city of Midvale, share some basic information about the site, including its history, description, and cleanup, talk about some of the reuse planning activities that were done, and give an overview of some of the redevelopment activities that are actually going on today and will continue, we hope, in the future. Page 21 is a transition slide. If you move on to page 22, we'll start on the background of Midvale. So Midvale City was founded in 1909. Actually, there was there were people living there before that, and the smelter was operating. It was settled early after the Mormons moved to the Salt Lake Valley. It's located 12 miles south of Salt Lake City and is a part of the greater metropolitan area. Essentially, if you're driving south from Salt Lake, it's now one community after another, and you can't tell except for the signs that you've left the Salt Lake City boundary proper. Midville is actually a small low to moderate income community. A lot of working class people live there, and it was built out. There was essentially no place to expand. There's about 28,000 people that live there. Slide 23. So historically, there were two major employers in town. There was the smelter and mill, and that stretched along the entire western boundary of the town. And right along there is the Jordan River, which is the major river that flows through the Salt Lake Valley. On the eastern side of town, and it actually was a different town until recently, it was Union Fort, and that was a farming community. In the last 10 years, Union Fort and Midville have joined together. They're now called the City of Midville. But essentially, those were the major employers. The mill and the smelter took up almost 20% of the city's land area, so huge influence on the town, both when they were operating and also then when they closed and became ultimately a Superfund site. As I mentioned, it is a low to moderate income working class area, and importantly, by the time the site became Superfund sites, there was no infrastructure left on this huge area. If you look at page 24, there's an aerial view, and as a point of reference, Interstate 15 is the large road that you can see running north-south through the middle of this map, excuse me. And Interstate 215 is the major road that you can see running approximately east-west. And just to the left of Interstate 15, the one going north and south, you can see a bunch of open space. And those are the Superfund sites, a large area, as I said. Moving on to page 25. That area was ultimately divided into two national priority list sites. Sharon Steel, which is approximately the area where the old mill used to be, and Midville Flag, which was where essentially the smelter was. There was a lot of discussion about listing these sites and a lot of controversy, but essentially they did end up listed and final on the national priorities list. And then of great concern to the local community, of course, and the local government was this huge area, more than 600 acres, that were empty and their fate uncertain. Page 26. So when I got assigned to the site, Sharon Steel remediation was quite a ways along. In fact, it was essentially done. And the first thing I was told, literally, when I walked out there, was that by the mayor, Mayor Joanne Seguini, who is still the mayor in Midville, I was told that they didn't want another Sharon Steel. And at that point, I really didn't realize what she was talking about, but it was very clear to me that I needed to figure out what she was talking about. So one could say that Sharon Steel, which is a huge pile of mill tailings, was remediated the old-fashioned way. We put a very good impermeable cap over the structure. It's got very good and very steep, at times, slopes, but very well engineered, a fence around the whole site. And it could be called the old-fashioned way of how Superfund used to do things. At the time, as the remedy was being selected, the community and the local government and other officials in Utah tried to tell both EPA and the Utah Department of Environmental Quality that they were concerned about the future use and they wanted it to be considered. And, well, frankly, I don't think everyone involved in the project really knew how to go about it. They were concerned about dealing with the contamination out there, especially because the contamination was literally into the Jordan River, which is at the foot of the slopes. Mayor Seguini, during that time, was a city council member, and then became mayor just before I got on the project, and as I found out, she was determined that things improve and that we do something different with the other Superfund site in this small community. And she directed her staff, which was very lucky for me, directed her staff to work with EPA and the state to make it different and make it better the next time. So we tried to do things differently, and in the beginning, that took a lot of listening. We gathered everyone together, including the property owner, which was Littleson Incorporated. It was a small family-owned company at that point. The smelters were no longer involved, and the smelter companies, they had settled out some time before. And we tried to listen to what they needed and tried to figure out what was the right thing to do out there. Slide 27. So next I'm briefly going to describe some of the history and the cleanup. And you can see there a picture of part of the site with the gorgeous mountains in the background. But part of the site and what we were dealing with at that point in time. Page 28. Prior to me getting the site, this Midvale Slag site was divided into two operable units, which you can see on this slide. And the Sharon Steel site is just to the south of operable unit 2, OU2. If you look closely at your map, you can see it, something scrawled there, tailings, which was the old mill tailings pile. Slide 29. One thing the property really has going for it, it is in a great location. As I said, it's essentially right outside of Salt Lake City, just minutes from the airport. It has Interstate 15 running right nearby, as well as Interstate 215. There's a major rail line running through the site, and it has the Jordan River right next to the site, which is common for a lot of our industrial areas, and certainly for industries like smelters and mills, they needed the water. And that now is being made into, in many places up and down the Jordan River Valley, the Salt Lake Valley, it's being made into an amenity that the residents in the whole valley can use. Slide 30. Here we have a picture of what the smelter looked like when it was operating with the cemetery in the foreground. If you look, that's the little piece of property with a fence around it. It was the original cemetery in Midvale and gradually got overtaken by the smelter facility. And in fact, smelter waste ended up on that, and that was a part of the cleanup. So starting in the late 1800s through 1958, there were at least five different smelters that operated in that general area. In 1958, the smelters actually went out of business, and most of the buildings were knocked down. The adjacent mill actually continued to operate, working with another smelter in the Salt Lake Valley until 1971, and that was located on Sharon Steel. And we were left with a lot of heavy metal contamination in the soil and groundwater, as well as large slag piles and other smelter waste. There was also a lot of contamination in Midvale City proper. The sand from the different industrial operations was often used in sandboxes, in for filling yards, and that was cleaned up under part of the Sharon Steel cleanup. But suffice it to say that the city has had a long history, unfortunately, for them with Superfund work under Superfund. Moving on to the next slide, 31, and focusing in more on the flag itself, you can see the interstate running there, and the site is essentially bounded by Winchester to the north and West Center to the south. On the other side of West Center is the Sharon Steel site. About 446 acres, and then the two different operable units. Operable Unit 1, I should note, while the smelter was operating, was essentially buffer land. Prior to that, it had been farm fields, agricultural land, and eventually was purchased by the smelter as a buffer. Over the years after that, there had been a few things up there, including a small wastewater treatment plant and then a small landfill. Slide 32. Is again a picture of what the plant looked like when it was operating. Slide 33, focusing a little bit on operable Unit 1, which was actually completed by the time I took over the project. At this point in time, there was a small mobile home park in the part of the map that's green, parcels W, E, and W. So they excavated and backfilled and resodded the mobile home yards. The same over on the blue parcel next to it, WESE. That was some residential yards that were cleaned up. But the majority of it, the yellow area, was actually still relatively unused, though things had been dumped there over the years, some excess waste and stuff. One of the interesting things is the agency decided that that would be, industrial use would be allowed there and not residential. One of the things we didn't know early on in our program, or we didn't know to even ask, was even though it was zoned industrial, unfortunately the way the zoning worked and it was designed at that time as everything, including industrial, was allowed at that site on that property. So that was something we had to go back and fix later as our learning and understanding grew. But at the time, at the record of decision for that parcel, it was zoned. We decided that it was zoned industrial. That was allowed, and there were institutional controls to prevent residential use. Slide 34. This is a little further on in the process where the topmost parcels are still still allowed to be residential, and we work to allow the bottom parcel, the yellow one, to be industrial commercial use and residential if there were ICs. Now, one point I don't have here that I don't show is that even further, more recently, a developer came forward and wanted no institutional controls on his part of, he has a portion of this yellow property, and these are hundreds of acres, so, and he worked with us to do further sampling and further excavation, so there now is a portion of this parcel that I don't have a map drawn of that actually has no ICs for the soil. Moving on to the next slide, 35. Here's another picture of what Midville looked like and what the pretty substantial industrial complex was when it was a smelter. 36. So when we started working on what the remedy should be, the decision document for Operable Unit 2, where the smelter footprint essentially was, we divided up the site into three different parts, smelter waste and slag, groundwater, and then the riparian zone along the river. We were dealing with mostly heavy metals, lead and arsenic mostly, some cadmium, and some other minor metal contamination. But one of the things, now talking about local government's role, that I was very lucky to have is participation from Midvale City, where they actually worked with me, reviewed the documents, actually helped us decide how to sample, and we worked through things such as, should we have an impermeable cap, should we not, what kind of excavation would be allowed, what was the reasonably anticipated future land use, what about in the future land use, should we allow irrigation to happen, what would that do to the groundwater plume? So we were able to work through all these things during the remedial investigation feasibility study. Moving on to slide 37. So how did we get to this, which is a cleaned-up version where the sod is still growing right after the cleanup? Slide 38. I'd like to talk to you now about why do reuse planning, and then talk about some of the successes in the city's efforts. Page 39. One of the things driving Midvale City and the community was that really this land was the only really substantial size land that they had for development, and the economic status of our community really depended on us finding something to do with this land. And there were problems, as I mentioned, at Sharon Steele, because of the restrictions and the fact that there was an impermeable cap, there were slopes, and there were questions about stability and whether, how much weight the capped area could handle. Moving on to page 40, I don't want to imply that even though Midvale City played a huge role, there were other people involved too. The property owner, which was a small family company that devoted a significant portion of their time and resources to working with us. pardon me, there was also a citizens group, which was, if you're familiar with it, they'd gotten a technical assistance grant from EPA to work with both Superfund sites. They were Citizens for a Safe Future from Midvale, and they also played an instrumental role in helping me, reviewing documents, providing input to me on what would work for their community. And my counterparts at the state, Utah Department of Environmental Quality, which I have to say we had support up to the head of that agency at the time, Diane Nielsen. So the property owner not only worked with us, but had legal counsel that understood both redevelopment and Superfund, which was greatly helpful. Great. I can't say enough how important that was that they had that. The city staff really, maybe unfortunately, became experts in Superfund and were able to actually help me and work through and understood how we did a remedial investigation, how we did a feasibility study, what we had to consider during the 9 criteria analysis. They were extremely helpful and extremely involved. We spent a lot of time understanding each other's concerns, including the city helping me understand what their concerns were for the future and, very important for now, how we could fit what controls, institution controls, we thought we needed into their process. Because we've seen places where we come in and we think we're putting great controls on, but if they're not integrated into what the local government is doing, if they're just an add-on and not in part of their normal way of thinking, it becomes more difficult to maintain them over time. And Midvale City was great in that we really worked with their Director of Community and Economic Development, who oversaw the Planning Department, as well as their Public Works Department, to really integrate into how they do business the institution controls for this site. So moving on to slide 41, another thing that was really useful is when the smelter company settled out many years before, they had cashed out, essentially, and put money into what we call a special account, an interest-bearing account. And I was lucky in that I could use that money, lucky in that sometimes those accounts specify what the money can be used for and restricted. But because this was one of the first ones in the country, it was just put in for use of the cleanup. So I was able to use that money to fund a position in local government. Because the institutional trolls that we have are so critical for maintaining the protection of the remedy and for assisting in the redevelopment over time, we actually, through the special account, are funding a position in local government that will gradually get phased out and just become a part of normal city business. But because it is additional work and because it is important, we decided to take this step and fund this position. I want to mention for those on the call that you can't do this just with Superfund remedial dollars. There's a restriction in the law. So because this is operation and maintenance, you either have to have something like a special account or a responsible party willing to pay, or the state would have to be willing to do that if on a funding site. So this was something that I was lucky to have. And glad to be able to. Moving on to slide 43. We're going to discuss a little bit more of the city's efforts next. I want to mention that Jordan Bluffs redevelopment is what the city now calls Sharon, or what the city now calls the Superfund property that was Sharon Steele. And Bingham Junction redevelopment is the Midville Flag site. So, slide 44. That was when, back in 98, was when Midville City recognized and told me that they had to take a more active role and they wanted no more Sharon Steeles. And we then, with the other parties I've mentioned, became partners in figuring out how to clean up and reuse the site. 45. The city worked really hard to solicit input from the census of what should be the reasonably anticipated future land use. This was done partially as they merged with the neighboring town, Union Fort, and partially as a part of the Superfund redevelopment process, where they held community meetings, and also did a charrette, a basically brainstorming session where they visioned what the future land use could be. And then they worked really hard to identify not only the Superfund activities, but what additional activities the city could do to help make that plan come into being. Page 46. So for both the Superfund sites, the city worked on developing planning and zoning controls. This is all in addition to the remedy. The planning and zoning controls, which I'll mention later, and any building permit controls and engineering design, and also getting information out to the public. Page 47. Midville City had a lot of time and with our help, communicating the vision for redevelopment through the master planning process, and also did a gaps analysis to figure out what resources were in place and which ones were needed. Page 48. One of the things that became apparent when they did the gaps analysis was that putting infrastructure on this large property would be a major burden on a developer coming in on both sites, but especially on the Sharon Steele site. So they actually worked through tax increment financing, or a TIF, to actually help offset that. And they did other improvements on their own to help decrease the cost of development, that things that Superfund couldn't do. So the Jordan Bluffs redevelopment, which is really just in the initial stages now. Nothing has really been built there, and I'm on slide 49. We've worked with the city to do institution controls. They have an overlay district for that area. These numbers have come from the city, but their tax increment reimbursement is $44 million. They put in a sewer utility, a sewer lift station and transmission line for almost $1 million. And also, I don't think these are installed yet, but there's a water utility. The estimate is $370,000. Moving on to page 50, which this is specific to the Bingham Junction or Midvale Slag side of the property, is they also used the TIF, $22 million for reimbursement of infrastructure costs. There's also a sewer utility lift station, which is constructed, and I don't think all the water lines are in yet, but they are going in because redevelopment is indeed happening at the Midvale Slag side of the site. One thing I didn't mention that I think is important is how the city handled the vision. And this isn't on your slide, but you see the two different names, Jordan Bluffs and Midvale Slag, Jordan Bluffs, excuse me, and Bingham Junction instead of Sharon Steele and Midvale Slag. The mayor decided one point way back when the charrettes were happening that she was looking at the future. So you will never hear her use the Superfund names, Sharon Steele and Midvale Slag. She instead, from that point in time, has always used these other names and, you know, has really set the tone for moving on and envisioning what could happen out there. So, slide 51. We're going to talk about redevelopment today next. If you move on to slide 52, back in 99 was when we got the redevelopment pilot grant from Melissa's office and basically helped get us started in trying to figure out what are we going to do out there, which nobody really knew. Since that time, we've used other tools that you can see listed here. And the picture that you see is the current master plan for the site, much of which is actually going in. And it's a really interesting mix. It's obviously mixed use, industrial, residential. If you look all the way down in the bottom right-hand corner, there's a green space, and that is actually a park that's built around that old cemetery that you saw in earlier pictures. It's basically that was desecrated by the industry that was there. And now it's a park to honor and preserve the memory. So the city's really stepped up and done a lot to actually bring a vision in place and actually address a lot of the needs of their community. Slide 53, you have a picture there, the top picture. Those are actual houses that are on the Superfund site. There's actually people living on the site now, which is incredible to watch over time. But when you're walking out there, you can't tell that it ever was a Superfund site. And the bottom future apartments that are scheduled to be built. Page 54, another thing that's happening is there's actually a light rail going through the property. This will connect to downtown Salt Lake. You'll be able to just eventually someday just travel from the airport right down to Midvale. If you look at the drawing on page 54, in the right-hand side, you might see Bingham Junction Station right next to the Interstate 15, and then just to the left of that, Gardner Village Station. That orange section there is the part that will be going through the Superfund site, and it's under construction now. So there is a whole bunch of transit-oriented development that's planned for this facility. Moving on to page 55. As I said, there are houses that are on on the site now, including some low-income HUD houses that are going up, HUD apartments, excuse me, and houses that are going up right now. And just this past August, there was a groundbreaking ceremony for a corporate center, and it's been one of the major tenants is FL Smith, which is a Danish firm that's actually putting their headquarters here and will be the first part. They will have two LEED certified buildings that are the construction has begun on, and that's particularly exciting to the city officials in Midvale because this company is a mining company. They make mining equipment and smelting equipment as well as do mineralogical testing, and so Midvale did not want to be ashamed of its mining past. They're very proud of it, and so having this company actually move in is one of the ways that they feel they can honor their past, and so they're very excited with good reason about that. Moving on to slide 56, some of the work that's still ongoing out there, because we've done most of the work, but there's a little bit remaining, is the work along the Jordan River. And there's actually ecological work that's being done to stabilize the riverbanks, enhance the riparian area, and outside of the Superfund program, but we're coordinating with it, a linear park is being connected to the rest of the greater Salt Lake area that will, it's just a great amenity, bike paths and all sorts of picnic areas and stuff all up and down the Jordan River in the Salt Lake Valley. Slide 57. One of the new programs that EPA is in the process of announcing with the housing, U.S. Department of Housing and Development and also Department of Transportation is a smart growth program. It just so happens that I think what we did at Midvale Flag illustrates a lot of these goals. There's affordable housing on the site, and that was very important in the city's planning, being a low to moderate income community that they have affordable housing. We have the interstates going by as well as the transit, the railroad going right through the site, and that it supports the existing community and be an outgrowth of it. So I think this is illustrative of what EPA is hoping that our new smart growth program will do for other communities too. Slide 58, I think everyone involved in the project agrees that the outcome was much better for this site than had EPA and the state just gone on with how we did business before and going about it our old way. Now we were able to actually have a very good cleanup that's very protective, but yet assist the local community in a lot of their needs. And bringing the different people to the table from different perspectives gave us different ways to look at how to solve problems, which we really wouldn't have had without this. And I'd like to, my last two slides, slide 59, is a quote from Mayor Seguini. She said, "I don't think the general public even knows that this is a Superfund site. To me, this means the right remedy was chosen and the site was cleaned up appropriately." And I think Mayor Seguini truly does believe that, as do the rest of us, that this really worked, and it was worth the time and effort put into it to achieve this goal. And I'd like to finish with slide 60. It's one of my favorite slides from before the cleanup. These are the huge slag piles, which is smelter waste, that existed on site. And if you look very closely towards the right-hand bottom picture, corner of the picture, you can see two little people in front of the grasses that are growing there. So that's what we started with, and now there are people living on that property. So I do think it is a success story, and we're very proud of it. And that completes my part of the presentation.
Thank you, Fran. I guess since we have some time, there's a couple of ways we could do this. Gene, can we go ahead and show the video and then have people come back and we can discuss everything? Is that possible?
Absolutely. If you want to direct individuals to take a look at that video now, we actually included a link to it, and I believe that is on slide number 62. In the slide set there, there's a hyperlink at the very bottom of the slide, which directs them over to the Superfund homepage, where they can actually replay the Life After Superfund video locally on their own computer. So those of you who wish to do so should double-click on that hyperlink and open that up.
And then we'll still be here, so after you watch the video, come on back, and we're here to answer questions. So I would say I think we're talking about 10 minutes.
Yeah, I think approximately about 10 minutes or so. I'm going to replay it locally here on my end. And then once that happens, we'll go ahead and address some questions. We did have a few that were submitted online, so we did see those questions, and we will get to them as soon as we're done with the video today. So if you can hang tight, in about 10 minutes, we'll get back to those questions.
Thanks, everybody. Enjoy the video. Okay, Fran, I'm just checking. Are you there?
Yes.
Great. Okay.
Did you want to start with, I think what I'm going to do is, since we had a number of questions that came in online throughout the presentation, I'm going to start with those. Those of you who are on the telephone lines, we're going to go through the online questions, and then we'll bounce over to you. If you've muted your phone line, if you'd like to ask a question out loud, you can do so in just a minute or so by simply taking your phone off of mute. You press #6 to come off of mute, and we'll be able to get to your questions in just a second. But in the meantime, those of you who are streaming the audio online, you can continue to submit comments and questions now. I'm going to start with the first one that's coming in from Dallas, Texas. And they asked this question pretty early on. They were asking where they can find information about non-NPL sites but are still part of CERCLA.
I think the best thing to do would be to get online to epa.gov and go to the main page, and there's all kinds of information on there. And they'll just have to select and see, probably from the Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response, there'll be another section on for sites that are not just NPL sites. But I would start with epa.gov.
Exactly. I would suggest the exact same thing. I think it's epa.gov/superfund, and there are links to find sites where you live. And there's a main CERCLA database where you can search through both NPL and non-NPL and a variety of other types of sites. So that was the first question online. The next question online asked, this was about midway through, and they wanted to know what percentage of the redevelopment cost was paid by Sharon Steele and Midville Smelter?
Of the redevelopment cost, none. We used Superfund, The cleanup used money from the special accounts that were set aside from the settlement from those companies, but we did not use any Superfund dollars or special account dollars to do the actual redevelopment. That was funded other ways, some from the property owners and some from the developers and some from the city, but none of the Superfund dollars went towards redevelopment.
Okay, great. Another question that came in online is in reference to slide number 58, and they ask what exactly the creative solutions are.
One of the things was how we structured, working with the city, how we structured the ordinances. You can actually go read the ordinances in the overlay districts. They're on the Midville City website, which is midvale.com. Under their planning, the ordinances are actually online and posted there. But how we actually worked with the community to develop those and the municipal government to develop those. Another thing we did was the city was a partner and a partner throughout and including a part of the consent decree, so the institutional controls are enforceable, which was at least at that time a critical component for EPA and the state to feel that we were going down this road and we could depend on these institutional controls, that they just couldn't be changed. And having another part of the solution was having the person that works for the city who's funded from the special account. I'm told by the current developers out there that having someone who can actually speak to and help them work through any of the controls, so when they bought into the property, they're not actually wondering, what am I getting myself into? But that's all laid out, and there's someone there who's prepared to work with them. And so there isn't a delay in the development process while people go figure things out. That's often a big problem for developers coming in, because time, as you've heard, is money. So by laying all these things out, developers know what they're getting into, they know what they have to consider, they know what they have to cost out, and it just makes the process all very visible and not hidden, so they can make their business decisions about what it will cost them to get in and have something built on this property. And they've told me that they found that really reassuring, and in fact, better than some other properties that aren't Superfund, but where they may not know going in what their actual parameters are that they have to work in. So those are some of the creative things that were done.
Great. I think the next question that came in online is related to that, and they ask, what exactly did you learn from this site that you will be sure to apply on other sites?
Well, I think one of the most important things we learned from EPA's perspective is it's worth the time and energy to engage and work with the local government and get their perspective so that, you know, you're able to come up with appropriate ICs that are robust and yet protect the remedy and work over time. I'm hoping other people see, especially local governments, that even though this is an additional workload for them, yet it's worth their time because of the outcome that can result from putting the time in through the process.
And Fran, if I could add to that, what we learned sort of looking at it nationally is that there is a lot of information that is not known typically by local governments about the Superfund program. And so we have almost, I feel that we have almost what I would call an affirmative obligation to get out there and make sure people learn about the program and make sure we, when we look at working with local governments, that we try to even the playing field so that they know what they know what they need to know, and they're not at a disadvantage because they don't really understand how the program works.
I totally agree, and I'd like to add one other thing, and that is it's really easy to think very internal for EPA, like this is our cleanup and this is how we're doing it and this is all going to work, but really, I think Melissa might have said this way back in the beginning, it's the local government that's there over the long term and is there watching. And so it's really important for us to understand their perspective and what's going to work for them in the long term after we leave and go on to our next project.
Great. I think that's the end of the questions I have submitted online. For those of you who are joining us on the telephone lines, feel free to go ahead and speak up. You can identify yourself if you like or just ask a question directly. If you've muted your lines, you simply need to hit #6 on your telephone line to ask a question of our speakers today. Again, any questions online, feel free to speak up. Simply hit #6. Okay, I don't hear any questions coming in online, and it doesn't look like we have any additional questions that were submitted online. So, Fran, or if either of you would like to make any closing comments, you're free to do so now.
I could just remind everybody, first of all, thank you for participating and for your questions. I encourage you to look at the websites that and the tools that I've mentioned. Remember, again, that we have another webinar coming up on October 22nd. On municipal acquisition by local governments and legal tools for reuse. Fran and I believe, are both available if you wanted to get in touch with us by email to ask us any additional questions about this presentation. And I look forward to seeing you all at the next webinar. Fran, do you have any closing remarks you'd like to make?
No, just thank you all very much, and feel free to contact me if you have any questions.
Okay, and we hope you enjoyed the video.
Indeed. In fact, there's a number of other ones up there on the Superfund website that you guys should check out if you have a moment. So with that, I'd like to extend my thanks to all the participants today who joined us on the phone lines and streaming simulcast. I'd also like to thank the Office of Superfund Remediation and Technology Innovation with Melissa Friedland, who helped kick things off today, and extend my thanks to the regional speakers who talked about the actual site that we looked at as part of the Superfund Redevelopment Initiative. This is going to conclude today's Internet seminar. Just a gentle reminder that we did record everything, and it will be made available as part of the CLUIN online archive in approximately 1 to 2 weeks following the live delivery today. If you'd like to receive alerts when our latest archives are made available, you are welcome to sign up for our free iTunes podcast. You can actually go right into iTunes and search for CLUIN, the Cleanup Information Network, and you'll find us there. Again, my thanks to all of the organizers, the instructors, and our participants today. If you have any follow-up questions, feel free to reach out to me, June Valens, or any of the speakers today in this seminar series, and we'll be sure to follow up. I thank you for your time. I hope you found this valuable. I hope that you'll take a moment to fill out that short online feedback form, and that we'll see you again on a future CLUIN Internet seminar. Thank you, and have a wonderful afternoon.